Something stinks in this house, and I think it's a ghost. I need to find it with Andrew Main's Ghost Vision Viewer app. It's on the iTunes store. It's only 99 cents, available for iPhone. And now the iPad, Ghost Vision HD. You have a radar, maps out points in space, and tells you highly improbable and potentially paranormal events are taking place. Imagers, word generators, PK detectors, arrows, yes or no. Yeah, everything you need to find out where that stink is. It's like fish made out with eggs. You know, unlike EMF or EVP detectors, not prone toward false positives. And now you can get on your iPad, big fat display. You can make sure that you track down that stank ghost. So get a demo, andrewmain.com/ghostvision. Check it out on iTunes. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com. Conclusion of the Weird Things 2-parter. If you have not caught part one, please go to iTunes or the WeirdThings.com website to get caught up. But now we join our heroes already in progress.
All right. So, on continuing on our cop theme, so Spiro and Fudge.
Yes, Spiro and the Fudge.
All right. Given your stellar track record,
I'm 1-1. And by 1-1, I don't mean that we are 1-1, me and Spiro. I don't know where this
We are 1-1, fused together by our love for killing bad guys.
No, partnership. Our partnership. We're partners in, you know, in the force.
So you're captain. I'll play the captain. Like, you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks,
absolutely
Cap.
Great job. I'm so proud of you guys. I am sending you to Italy on a bus to work with the local police there on a bust on the mafia.
Okay, two things. Number one, Andrew, you have to come up with a name for your captain character.
I know we name each other here.
Okay. Spiro, what do you think the captain's name?
You're talking about Captain Alifans?
Alifans. All right. So.
Goodbye. It's Cap Nal. Cap Nal sent us to Italy. The second thing I want to say is that this has followed the exact, you know, regular plan of action for crappy, like, cop comedies where, like, they can only be in the city for so long before they randomly, no matter how ridiculous it might seem, they wind up getting sent abroad.
You're getting sent to, you hope you picked up the idea that you're probably not well loved in the department. That's why you're being sent to Italy. Well,
I love the fact that it's not even like go to Italy to find the guy who stole the Mona Lisa or something. It's like, we want you to go arrest the mob. Go arrest the mafia.
No, there is a trail. This is the, one of them 70s sort of movies kind of connection. There's this big flow of cocaine. It's been traced into Caserta, Italy, all right? And so,
So you're saying it would be incorrect to name this scenario Spiro and the Fudge 3, Mafia Wars.
I think it's the same movie, all right? Okay. So you're going to Italy, all right? You get sent to your... I've nominated you guys. I'm like, you geniuses. I'm making you part of this international crime task force.
All right, Captain Al.
Alifans, right. We're looking out for you.
We'll make you proud.
Boss. So, you guys are sent on a bus to show up there, all right? And the Italians are like, "Oh, we're so great. We've heard so much about you."
Okay, so what's our contact, Giuseppe?
Luigi.
Hey, have a pizza pie.
Giuseppe Luigi.
That's right, Giuseppe Luigi. All right, gentlemen, we're going on a bus today. I want you to come along, all right?
On the bus?
Okay.
Yeah, we ride a bus to get to the bus. Yes, it's Europe. We love public transportation.
It's the bus. Get in the bus. Let's go.
All right. So
Giuseppe Luigi. Where are we going to go bust these people? Who are we busting, Giuseppe?
The mafia. Luigi. Hey. So, we're going to do is we're going to go up. We're going to go plant a listening device. We're going to plant a bug.
We take the bug. I'll do the bus.
All right. So like you go along, a couple of the Italian agents, the tech, and another cop. You go with them. So you take your bus over there. You go park in an alley. Alley in Italy. Yeah. Again, you're going up against the mafia. I mean, the mafia.
Capital M, not OG the lowercase. OG mafia.
Yeah, okay. It's like the Neapolitan. This is the Italian mafia. This is the OG mafia, all right?
This isn't like the Luxembourg, Kentucky mafia. This is the real mafia.
Yeah. So the two Italian guys, the two other cops who are with, they're like, all right. They're like, all right, fruitcake one, fruitcake two. We need you to wait outside. Watch for us, okay? We got to go plant this listening device.
I've seen the pants you guys wear. I'm just saying. Like, number one, we're not gay. And number two, like, look in the mirror.
Hey, don't be so judgmental here.
All right.
Maybe you guys are, all right?
Hey, listen. I know what I am, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Gentlemen.
And I've had my questions on Spiro.
There's the mafia to be busted. Can we focus?
Yeah, all right.
I'm just pointing it out.
And you're in Italy, and the lines between that are totally different in Europe.
I'm just saying I don't know what the lines are. It's fine. We're here to solve a crime.
You don't know where the lines are. How often have you used that excuse?
The mafia. Can we arrest the mafia, please?
I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
All right. Now, so the two Italian cops, you guys are watching the back door in the back alley.
All right.
And Spiro actually picks the lock.
Okay.
All right. Like, I got this lock for you picking. The Italian guys are impressed. Like, all right, you wait here. We go inside. Okay.
All right.
They go inside. Then all of a sudden, you hear a "Mamma Mia!" Okay. One of them comes running out. It just takes off down the street.
Really?
Right. The other one goes, "Mamma Mia!" It comes running out, stops in the street, grabs you by the lapels, says, "Ay, ay, ay! You go in there." He goes, "Ay, ay, ay!" Well, you know, he's lost the ability to speak English.
Okay. So we've had both the cops that were,
assigned really to the case. Stuff. We needed to. We're the automatic backup. It's time for Spiro and the Fudge to do what we do.
All right.
I pull out my nightstick.
First and foremost, I'm going to get into my phrase book and look up the words for animal control. And then I'm going to call that in.
You can't. You're trying to plant a bug if they know you're there.
Oh, God. Okay. All right.
Just way to blow the bust. International incident. Then you got to come back to my office and I got to chew you out.
All right. I don't want to get chewed on or out by Captain.
Yeah, you both are wearing Donnie Brasco leather jackets. You're totally undercover in Italy.
Okay. All right. Then we're going to listen. We got to blend in.
Wearing striped shirts and short pants and straw hats or something.
Number one, Spiro, this is the last time I let you go shopping for our undercover wardrobes.
Listen, I was told that this was what's in the summer in this region, all right?
Right. So we gotta, let's go in. Let's make our way in, but be on your toes, Spiro.
Okay.
I'm on my toes. So is the little Fudge.
All right.
Well, I don't know why part of your undercover uniform you still have a nightstick with a little kitty stick.
Are you kidding me? I don't go anywhere without little Fudge.
All right, now we're gonna change roles here. You ready for this?
Yeah.
You two are a couple of Neapolitan mafiosos.
Got you.
All right. You've got some cocaine. Okay. Now you're talking Tony Montana. Cocaine does it too. It's a true side effect.
This is,
I read that somewhere.
I'm Spiris.
Yes.
And
I'm Fudgicoli. I'm Il Fudge.
I'm Fudgicoli.
I like Il Fudge, but that's fine.
Il Fudgicoli.
So you guys are a couple of mafiosa drug lords, cocaine lords.
Okay.
You've got this warehouse and you've got to protect your cocaine stash.
Gotcha.
All right. Yes. You got a big, I want you to visualize, you got a table full of cocaine.
Yeah. Freaking Scarface style, right? We're taking turns.
Which we refuse to bag. We just leave it there because it looks impressive.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's a lot of cocaine.
That's a lot.
It's like,
power.
You know, we look at it like, listen, do you really need an aquarium? No, you keep it there because it looks cool. It's the same thing with our pile of cocaine.
Make it into a snow mount, put little army men in there, have them ski down there.
Well, listen, I mean, some people might think that our ant farm made entirely of cocaine would be a little excessive. We don't.
But look how fast those ants are making that farm, though.
Exactly. An entire colony carved out in 15 minutes.
So you need to protect. You need to protect cocaine. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of people working for you. You got some people with some sticky fingers or some.
Some we trust, some not so much.
Maybe I'm just going to let you know, Eel Foods trust no man.
All right. Some people want a little bit of taste maybe for themselves. It's bagged now. You guys finally decided to bag the stuff up because the maid came in and half the cocaine went away and her vacuum cleaner just knocked it over. So you're like, all right, that was a dumb idea.
It's a bad move.
Okay. So you got it bagged up. You got the cocaine bagged. But like, all right, we got to protect this cocaine. We got to protect this cocaine. We're not here. What do we do to protect the cocaine?
Why do we need to protect it?
Because people steal from you. You trust your fellow.
I mean, come on. Have you ever tried to run a criminal operation?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So, I mean, the first thought would be dogs. Of course, that'd be a standard. You know, make sure it's something that makes noise, that would deter people from trying to get in.
Okay. So, you got a broom closet. Do you want to? So you put a dog in the broom closet with the cocaine?
No. You put a dog in the room or house at large. So anybody coming in, it would make a lot of noise, and the dog would bite him.
I would also buy a security system. In fact, you know what I'd do as a backup
for the dog?
Yeah, so
you can call the cops if somebody tries to steal your cocaine?
No, listen, I was on a flight, and I got my SkyMall, so I got this little box that barks like a dog, so everyone will think there's a dog in here.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is all the guys that work for you know it's not real.
Yeah, idiot.
But what happens if your dog is sleeping and somebody comes in?
No, all right, hey, listen. Number one, we got to double up an independent security force to make sure that you stake the place and that they're only loyal to us. They don't even know what's in there. They just think that we're, you know, art dealers.
No, these guys know. They work for you. They know.
God damn it. All right.
Okay.
I don't know. I think we need a creative solution.
So you got to, let's see, here's the problem with the dog. Sometimes you're not there for a few days at a time. You did that to the dog and he chewed up the place. Try that again. Another dog died. Thank you very much.
Gosh darn it.
All right. I'm going to say.
Sad when puppies die.
Now, we're trying to protect the cocaine against our own employees, right?
Yeah.
Hey, anybody. You don't want anybody mess with the cocaine.
Yeah, well.
But it needs to be good because the most pervasive threat on the inside would be our own employees.
It just seems like I should shoot one of our employees at random and say. And say he sniffed the cocaine, and then like, don't you be the next?
All right, you want to know what? I'm going to co-sign on that, so that happens.
All right, that's your solution. All right, that's your solution. All right. Well, this mafia, maybe a little bit smarter than you guys, did not decide to just because like if you have you had a big turnover in that business too, so you're going to shoot somebody every 6 weeks.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, until they get the message.
All right. So, and perhaps a little bit more humane, these mafiosos did not do that. So, flashback to Spiro and the Fudge. You go inside, okay? Now, you go inside there because these other two cops came running out.
Yeah, right? Like girls.
You work your way through there. You open up the door. You open up the office door, all right? You're just amazed by the hideous decorations. You work your way past the desk, and they said they were going to go put this listening device in the closet.
Okay.
You open up the closet, right?
We're back to the cops now, right?
Yeah, back to the cops. And you're about to find out what this mafia, what had frightened these other two cops so much that sent them running.
Spiros and El Fuge had put together,
Yes, yes.
Okay. Just you guys with like bigger, thicker mustaches. You open up the door.
And double-breasted suits.
And you see a pile of cocaine in bags.
Okay.
And there, sitting on top of the cocaine, hissing at you, is a giant albino python.
God, what is it with the snakes?
Hey, man.
3 for 3 on animal
and
control.
You totally called animal control.
But you can't call animal control.
I couldn't call it this time, but I did whisper to you as we were going in. I said, hey, Spiro, if we could call animal control, I totally would right now.
So if you called animal control, then what are you going to do? Take their snake away?
Maybe.
So you want to plant a bug to bust these guys so that's your solution? Let's steal their snake? You don't think they'd figure out something?
Of course we can't. We can't let them know that the police have been here. So we just need to deal with the snake.
Yeah,
like, get the snake out of the closet and then plant the bug and then get it back in the closet and then leave.
No. Maybe you put the bug in a dead rat and you throw it at the snake and maybe the snake eats the dead rat and then the bug's planted.
That's a crazy
in the snake? What are we listening for, snake belly?
No, I don't know. In my imagination, it's an awesome bug.
And it can hear. So we want through a snake, as the snake slowly digests our bug, we want to hear their plan through that. Like,
well, unfortunately, it would be like, so where do you want to take the cocaine? Let's take it to...
I think, number one, I think we're making a lot of assumptions about police surveillance technology and snake digestion.
Well, these cops, what they did is they fed the snake, which was hissing and trying to bite them, a chicken. Gave it, not a live chicken. Gave it a chicken and then planted the bug. Which I like to think
they kept in their back pocket the entire time.
No, I think they went back out and they got it. Like, what do we do? Okay. Let's go get a chicken. They came back, gave it a chicken. Instead of calling animal control and creating a crime scene, so when the mafia shows up, way to ruin a crime scene, guys. So they actually, this has happened twice. This is the mafia in Italy apparently is starting to use snakes to protect stuff.
Well, like, but a python isn't going to eat a human. I mean, I guess it could squeeze one human, but...
Yeah, you tell Giuseppe from the back country that, okay? You want to protect your cocaine stash instead of murdering your employees. And this was a nasty snake that bit people.
You think it's a psychological thing?
No. You find a mean mamma jamma snake and you put it next to something that you don't want effed with and you let it do its thing. Nature takes its course.
What does that mean?
Snake bites people and it looks scary as heck.
Has there been not a theme here, Brian, about what reptiles do to people here?
No.
The only way to kill it is to stab it in the face with a sword like the second Harry Potter. Okay.
So is that what spirit?
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. That was a weird tangent. I'm sorry.
So, so this actually happened. Tell me the part about the undercover cops trying to plant a bug. Happened.
They wanted to go plant a bug in a cocaine stash, but the problem they had was that the drug dealers have been using pythons to guard cocaine. So the police of Italy said they had to evade a white python to plant listening devices near the cocaine stash of a drug ring in the Neapolitan Camorra Mafia. Investigators said in announcing the arrest of 25 suspects in Caserta, the officers had to sneak past the snake, which the alleged drug ring members used to protect their cocaine stash to plant listening bugs.
Sneak past? I mean, they say sneak past. I'm going to say walked widely around.
Why are you so negative on this concept of guardian snake?
No, I'm down with the snakes, but it's like, meanwhile, the cops are like, we had to sneak past the snake. Look, the snake knew you were there. Those snakes, they know when people are all traipsing around. They didn't put on their ninja costumes and tiptoe past the snake.
Nobody
the snake
said they were doing that.
Well, I'm saying you say sneaked past a snake. The snake knows you're there, man. Just say, we walked around the snake and we left like a 6-foot wide berth so he wouldn't bite us.
Rome police said an albino python was previously found guarding a cocaine stash in August. Officers had to feed the snake a whole chicken to prevent it from attacking.
Now, and what's up with that? Like
they gotta fatten up the snake.
No, but it's like the snake. How do you look at a snake's size and know that it's about to attack you unless you feed it a whole chicken?
Take it from the guy who got bit by a snake in a Christmas reef, and now you're the expert on when they're gonna attack or not.
I'm just saying, like how did they?
They got mauled under a car by a bunch of iguanas.
There was no. I will attack you unless you want to. You got a chicken on you? Because you've got a chicken on you, I'm not gonna attack you.
All right. Then let's play this out. Spiro and the Fudge. Spiro thinks, hey, listen, it's a snake. Whatever, dude. And the Fudge is like, listen, I saw a shop back around the corner. We can get a chicken, feed this snake, plant the bug, get the hell out of here. So, Spiro, what's your course of action? I'm going to go get the chicken. You're all alone. Spiro, how do you want to handle this snake?
Oh, look, I'm not saying that it's a bad idea to feed a guard snake a chicken. Of course that's what you do.
I'll be right back with the chicken. Spiro, go ahead. What are you doing?
Guard snakes love chickens, I assume, right? But don't do this quid pro quo thing where it's just like, we had to feed him a chicken or else he would bite us. Like, you don't know. You don't know what he was going to do.
So, all right, no, Spiro, think of something creative. How do we deal with the snake?
Go get the chicken, fine.
I'm gone. No, I'm already gone. You're by yourself.
I pull out a flute. I pull out Little Fudge and pretend he's a flute.
And you had to do a lot of explaining bringing that in the airplane.
Yeah, and I start weaving back and forth to hypnotize the snake.
Are you making sounds? Yeah. Please tell me what sounds are you making?
It's like, doo, 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 doo,
doo, doo, doo, doo. And Andrew, how does the snake react?
It just gets pissed and heads right towards him.
I start playing faster.
He just bites Spiro, you on the leg. Just keeps biting you.
For a brief moment, Spiro's like, it's working.
He just looks at you like, what kind of retard is doing this?
You walk in, and it's not a poisonous snake, right? It's just bitten me like 28 times. I'm still crying. I'm crying. I've got a nightstick with Hello Kitties on it. And I'm just going, doo doo doo.
Yes, weary travelers, gaze upon the face of pure evil. Doug Evil. Evil's named Doug now. I don't know, he just thought it sounded more colloquial. He's from Kansas City and he likes horror movies. That's pretty evil. Douglas Evil. Follow him on Twitter at Doug Evil.
You've got a sanctuary, all right? And in the sanctuary, you're in China now, are pandas, okay?
All right.
Now, part of what you've decided to do with the sanctuary is to let these pandas live in a very, very natural environment. So it's not a zoo where people can come look at them. It's
gawk
it's not,
at them.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. You want to keep them protected and insulated from humans. But you need to do some tests on these pandas. You got some little baby pandas there and some mama pandas. And so periodically you need to go grab a baby panda, weigh it, see how healthy it is, and do all these things. So what do you do?
What, to get a baby panda from a mom?
Well, you want to prepare them so they can live in the wild.
Wait. I release a bunch of snakes. So what is it I need to do? I need to what? Train a cub or to get the cub away from the mom to examine it?
You got from time to time, you need to go grab the cub. You need to get the cub and you need to go at exam. You need to run some little tests on it.
No, I got you. I got you. You want to know how to distract. Like, how do you handle the snatch and grab for the baby cub panda bear?
Yeah.
Can we completely rule out getting in a big panda suit and making friends with the other panda
bears?
Yes,
we can also rule out calling animal control. So let's just get that one off the table
no,
right
now.
No,
we would be animal control. We would be the ones. We'd be the Chinese equivalents getting the calls.
This is Spiro and the Fudge, like after they retired for being cops.
I'm going to do, we're going to play a game of yes or no. Okay, so ask me questions that have a yes or no answer.
Okay, does it involve some kind of bait, like tasty bamboo shoots or roasted marshmallows or carrion?
A hamburger.
You might do that to make Mama Panda sleepy.
Sleepy? Oh, because she gets sleepy after she eats a bunch. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then we need to separate the cub. So we need to maybe distract the cub. Do something. What would it involve?
Shiny objects.
Would it involve shiny objects?
No.
Would it involve
laser pointers?
Like a very attractive scent, maybe, that the cub would naturally want to come to?
No.
would it involve juggling that the cub would be transfixed by?
No. And again, part of the goal here is you want to prepare them for the wild. So you want to avoid human influences. So okay, going on there and doing your little sideshow may not be the best thing.
All right. Now, I know you said it's non-reptile, but in my imagination, I'm putting on like an arm length sock puppet that looks like a snake. That's like, you know,
terrify the baby panda.
Just to prepare him for
it. And it's little, they're delicate creatures. It has a heart attack and it dies. You just killed a baby panda.
Brian having his brain permanently warped after raising two daughters has just thought that Disney is the solution to every possible animal problem.
Yes.
So he starts making friends with in a sassy accent and singing to the panda.
But it's like, I'm so wrapped up in Pixar that it's like, I have to make him fall in love with the snake before the snake dies in the first act.
Okay. So I'm assuming that's not it, right, Andrew?
What was that again?
What I like to call the Disney method.
Not the Brian method, no.
I'm going to say probably not trank darts, right? You're not tranquilizing him?
No.
Maybe it's like a weather thing. Like we have to...
Weather? What?
We have to have like a flash storm or something that like separates the pandas.
The cubs from the bears?
All right. Well, it's Spiro and the Fudge. I don't know. Like maybe some sort of like...
I'm going to say loud noises. Loud noises. Like, in fact, a recorded lion's roar or tiger's
roar. What are you trying to do with your... Okay, your goal is to run some temperatures, do some measurement and all that, but you don't want them to have human contact. And Brian's just inventing ways to terrify the pandas. I don't know what scientific aim you have there, Brian.
Which, by the way, is this completely misguided new YouTube channel, is Baby Panda Terror. And it's just him with various methods of cruel torture scaring the living daylights out of a tiny panda.
And it's always with the, you know, the tagline is like, because, you know, you got to prepare him for the wild. And anything can happen out there.
Your goal is how do you
alcoholic father?
You got to go put the goal like Brian. You want to use one of those little ear things to go measure his temperature in his ear. That's your goal. We're not asking you to. And then you might have to face tigers. And then this could happen. That's not the goal. We're not actually asking you. We're just trying to have them in an environment where they're not encountering people where they think people are going to be friendly.
Could.
Wait,
of course, you're doing a very good job of establishing people are not friendly.
Exactly. Hold on. Just one thought of Brian's new YouTube channel, Baby Panda Terror, is the baby panda open on the baby panda just sitting peacefully under a tree, maybe a little bamboo twig hanging out of its mouth. And then all of a sudden, the leaves kind of shake and a visibly drunk Brian Brushwood drops from the limbs in a full one-man band outfit and starts making as much noise as possible. And then to a big screen, you know, to train him for the wild.
Because anything could happen. Dude, that's a million hits guaranteed. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
I'm going to say, what if you trained one of the other animals to, like, if you don't want human involvement?
You got serious, the bitch animal sidekick. No, but everybody bring it down. Animal sidekick, go.
I'm just saying, like, there are creatures that could probably... take a thermometer thing and stick it in the ear. What you want is no human interaction, that'll do it.
All right, inside
robot.
Ape.
Robot.
Okay, we have to train him for the wild, so we're going to throw a robot
at him.
But it's like you wrap some carpet around it. You tell him it's a gorilla.
So, remember,
I think we've struck out.
Yeah, remember at the very beginning, you guys asked me two questions at the same time, and I didn't really respond to them.
Okay. No, yes. I don't really.
So what was your first idea that you just immediately dismissed as a stupid idea, Justin?
To get dressed up as an animal and make friends with them.
Chinese conservationists are dressing up in fluffy panda costumes to help prepare captive-born cubs to live in the wild.
Yes! Yes! To me! Woo! Well, the fudge reigns supreme.
If you had asked if that was the case and you did not.
I did say that.
You said it as if it were stupid. Like, we could rule out dressing it because that would be stupid.
Well, yeah, there is that.
I actually did say that, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like our own Christmas parable.
You realize what you're doing, Andrew, is you're encouraging us to actually ask all of the stupidest ideas we can come up with just to get them out of the way.
Yes.
All right.
So really, so they're doing that. Are they like really like sophisticated, like animatronic faces and stuff? Or is it just like some Chinese dude named Zhang, like, oh, I don't know, get in the panda outfit?
Or it's like they get the guy who plays the Kung Fu Panda for local birthday parties and they're like, hey, you want to make $50 more?
Well, the researchers have they have panda suits, and we'll put the link up with the podcast so you can look at this, because you see this person walking a panda walking upright carrying a baby panda. Then you see two people in panda costumes. One of them is measuring the temperature of a baby panda while another one looks over. It's like furry ER.
Are the pandas really fooled?
Well, I mean, like, define fooled for a panda.
Well, I mean, they're just like, do they really think it's another panda?
I think the goal is so they don't see human shapes, so they don't identify humans.
But what do pandas do in the wild anyway? They sit around, they eat their bamboo, and wait to get eaten by someone.
So what do you think? The one panda's going to say to the cub panda, that's totally a human, by the way, don't trust it.
Well, no, but it's just like, I mean, I don't entirely understand what they were going for here.
I think the idea is if you get them too habituated towards people, they will go towards areas where there are people or feel more safe there.
I see. So instead, you're going to make them go to Disney parks and to children's birthday parties.
They're just going to start breaking down the doors like the zombies in Walking Dead for furry conventions.
That's right.
Panda swarm. Hey! If you're stuffing a turkey full of boring, then why don't you spice up your life? Your so-called 8-bit life at rvilligus.org/8bitlife. Vincent 404, a longtime friend of so many of our shows, has himself a random podcast about random geekery. And you can listen to it. rvilligus.org/8bitlife. Where it's a number 8. There we go. And follow him at Vincent404 on Twitter. He's been a friend to us forever, and I'm really excited. He has a podcast. I'm talking about his podcast on my podcast. This is what the listener spots are all about. Now, you get to listen to it. You can make a podcast. Talk to him. Woo! My so-called 8-bit life, the so-called 8-bit Claire Danes, is at Vincent404. Maybe he'll fall in love with an 8-bit Jordan Catalano. Ah!
Gentlemen, do we want to do some recommendations?
Yes.
Sure.
I will start with my recommendation while you two think about your own.
All right. I have one, actually.
I am going to recommend, I mentioned last time, the Craig Venter book, A Life Decoded, which I finished and I thoroughly enjoyed. I thought it was great. Reading that, I got interested in following more of the whole effort to decode the human genome. So I read Genome War. The Genome War, which is a really, really neat book. It covers that period of time, the race between the government effort to decode the human genome and then Craig Venter's efforts with Celera Genomics and the company where they were basically in a race, and gets into the personalities involved in there. And it is a very fascinating story because it's considered by some one of the most important scientific achievements since ever. Or it's the biological equivalent of landing on the moon or the atomic bomb or any kind of hyperbole you want to attach to it. And trying to figure out, part of it was there was this expectation it would solve a lot of mysteries. But in one way, it's more, it was able to help us draw a line around the genome and try to understand what it can tell us and what it can't. And we're surprised by how little it can tell us. We found out there were far fewer human genes than we realized. And just the play of personalities and the politics, it is just... When the Climate Gate thing happened, where they released a bunch of papers which exposed how the center that was the Hadley Center, the internal politics and what they were doing about their critics and some of the papers and stuff, and a lot of it was made out by both basically, you know, the climate people who were attacking the idea of human caused climate change or global warming said this was a smoking gun, and it was much. I think what it really revealed was just how political these things get and the lengths that scientists go to sort of circle around their own and protect themselves from outside criticism. And I know a number of my friends are scientists. Like, there's no big deal here. This was science as usual, science. And then, well, you realize, wow, that's really a messy, frightening process by people who are supposed to be embraced in the method of logic, logical thinking. And Genomorphs gets into that. The amount of politics and just outright deception that went on behind the scenes to try to maintain grant funding and to keep the project going and to not lose congressional support in the face of having somebody in private enterprise come along and say they could do it. It's a fascinating story. So that's the Genomorph. It's fascinating if you're into that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, there is something that is in, if I draw a line of a common essence of a lot of my favorite nonfiction stuff, especially anything that deals with large organizations, it's just kind of realizing, of course, with the clarity of hindsight, how ridiculous and how close we got to never having these things happen, you know, or for things happening in a far different way, or for, you know, the forces of good to be thwarted, like as is, you know, brilliantly kind of fictionally portrayed in The Wire, but was taken from nonfiction books that were written by some of the creators of that particular series, to realize, you know, what is bureaucracy? What is politics? What, you know, and how does it shape, you know, everything that we look at in life? And even when the stakes are as high as something like decoding the human genome, and I haven't read the book, but from what Andrew told me, it's kind of fascinating to look at that.
So that's my recommendation.
All right. I got something.
Go.
Early on, we had our talks about Peter F. Hamilton's Pandora's Star. And yes, the follow-up, Judas Unchained, takes place.
It's probably been brought up more than anything else on a regular basis.
Well, it does, you know, come up with a certain, you know, the S word, singularity.
Brian, I'm the enzyme bonded concrete.
Right? And there's recently, we're closer to that because we're using bacteria to fill in cracks in the concrete, right? So those two books are amazing, but there's a series that takes place 1,000 years after that. That we haven't talked about, I forget the entire, what's
Dreaming
the
Void?
The Dreaming Void trilogy, right? And the first two books have been out for a while, but I just noticed within minutes of finishing our last podcast, the Weird Things podcast, that the final book of that trilogy has come out. So I'm going to say, first of all, I understand that maybe 8 people in all of the people listening to this have read those first two books from this Pentagy, but definitely I am super, super excited to read this third book. I'm just about to start it myself. I'm actually just finishing up some other stuff right now, but I'm really looking forward to finishing the Dreaming Void trilogy. And I highly, highly encourage everyone else to jump on. Now, I'm not going to lie. It is the hardest science fiction I've ever read, but it's so fascinating. Like, I just spend so much of my time wrapping my mind around that world and living there virtually.
Yeah, to give everybody the idea of the universe and what makes Peter Hamilton interesting, and Brian, I would say that, tell me if you agree with me or not, that part of the strength of his writing is he's very good at imagining civilizations with very, very advanced technology that have a lot of cultural differences.
Still behaving in petty, very relatable ways.
Absolutely. Very real people who live thousands human. Of years. And absolutely very, very human. And it doesn't feel my problem with some sci-fi is people try to make the 20th century with flying cars and robots.
Yes.
And I never felt like it felt, obviously somebody listening to these 20 years from now might feel it sounds very archaic, but to me, it doesn't feel that. And he started writing, I don't forget some of his earlier books, but like Vernon Finch, who started kind of writing that sort of post, what's the word, singularity, sci-fi from, yeah, I guess like the early 1990s. It holds up. It holds up. It really holds up. And I think Hamilton stuff will probably hold up well too.
Yes, because as we know, and we've talked about this with stuff like the Walking Dead or all these other things, it's like a human nature doesn't change over time. And whatever the environment, whatever the situation, if you could still relate to the characters and their decisions and it's engaging, then you're in and you're all in.
Well, Brian, you know, that's a thing that always sort of bothered me about Star Trek.
Yes. This idea that we've evolved beyond the profit motive and these dirty Ferengi. And I'm like, you know, like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, like I remember somebody asking, how much does the Enterprise cost? Oh, money. Oh, we do things because we love to. It's like, so everybody got together and built this starship? Because, you know, when you want to tell a complicated story, some people don't like the idea of Starfleet, and the resources came from somewhere, so you just take them.
Well, that's what's great about all of those expanded universe novels, both for Star Wars and Star Trek, where a lot of these very talented sci-fi authors will grapple with these ideas. And that's what was great about Star. That's kind of why I was always a Star Wars guy over a Star Trek guy, although I did like Star Trek. But Star Wars was very relatable in that you had a guy who wanted to make some money smuggling some spice, making the Kessel Run. Oh, and I could wrap my mind around that, you know?
With this sidekick, Officer Fudge.
I would like to recommend something that nobody on the internet has ever talked about, and certainly nobody on this podcast. It's a little independent film that I wish would get more attention, called Moon.
Hmm, really?
Yeah. I don't know why anybody's not raving about this film. Did you just finally watch it?
Yeah. Probably at the same time you were watching Mallrats, Brian.
Oh, in your face! Yes. No, I finally watched it, and I was absolutely blown away by it. I can pay it for a low-budget indie film like it was. It so looks like a movie that costs more than it does, and all my only complaint is that I want more and more and more of that universe, and I don't know if we'll probably ever get it. But
we will get more from the director. The director's got another project coming up.
Well, yeah, the director's Duncan Jones, who is David Bowie's son, which, I mean, just makes you appreciate Ziggy Stardust all that much more, he's got a new film out, or a trailer for a new film out called Source Code. Andrew, you had the best descriptor for the Source Code trailer. What was it?
Let me think there. It was 12 Monkeys Meets Groundhog Day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think if you have not seen Moon and you watch the trailer for Source Code, as I did, and you think, well, that kind of looks like an interesting idea, but it looks a little convoluted and I don't know where it's going to go, then watch Moon and you will completely have $1 billion worth of faith in Duncan Jones's imagination. He's not a director that is a appreciator or creator of nice looking images. He is not a guy who is great at characters, and he is not a guy who is great at science fiction thinking. He is all three wrapped into one. I'm so excited for Source Code, having watched Moon, and Moon's on Netflix.
Instant Netflix download.
Yeah. Check it out, as I did. And also Sam Rockwell. When are we all going to get together and throw a surprise party for Sam Rockwell?
Surprise. Kind of feel you're like the most talented actor we've seen in the last 3 years.
He kind of never gets put in that first tier of people who are like, who's like the, you know, one of the best working actors today, but he so is. And this is one of those films where you don't realize until after you're done watching that Sam Rockwell has entertained you by himself for, you know.
Yeah. You expect him to walk back out and take a bow for you. And they're like, I hope you enjoyed my presentation of Moon starring me.
And the voice of Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
That pimp with a limp? Why, that's Manus Ferreira, MANUSFERREA.com. Man, he takes pictures of everything. We have a lot of photographers listen to WeirdThings.com, and they all do great work, but if you want to see a few sexy ladies in bikinis, I need you to head on over to MANUSFERREA.com, go to his gallery, and ba-boom! Sexy women's in bathing suits, and they're looking good. Manus doesn't screw around. I don't know if that rumor was circulating. MANUSFERREA. Check him out. And he said he'll hook you up on a print if you want one. Or follow him on Twitter. Same name. Manus Ferreira. Socks.
All right, you guys want to hear rapid fire, the stories I did not use?
Sure.
Workers face punishment for cat pics in what can only be described as the animal shelter Abu Ghraib. Some employees could face punishments for taking pictures of tranquilized cats in humorous positions. Already there, the UPI is making a statement by saying that it was humorous.
Oh, okay? My God.
So,
Brian, a cappella. Do, 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 do.
Yeah, you can't synchronize singing over Skype. It's not.
One of the photographs depicts a cat with a cigarette in its mouth and a knife between its paws, while another one shows a cat holding a pen with its teeth.
So all these right, are, next
these
story.
These were tranquilized cats.
We're gonna get hate mail if I start making the jokes that are in my head. There we go.
All right.
All right. What's the next story?
Next story is scientists pinpoint scientists pinpoint most uneventful day, April 11th, 1954. Apparently nothing interesting happened that day. They analyzed hundreds of millions of facts, and that was the day that was pretty much meh.
That's awesome. That we totally should have done that story.
In fact, love also that like that it sounds like an Onion story, but it's real.
Look, by the way, I will give you my permission to recycle any of these stories and feed them back to us and see if we're able to figure it out in the middle of the scenario.
All right. I just lost the link to it, but let me see if I can pull this up again. This is another one. So you're at IKEA, okay? And you're walking along and you look at a display microwave. I like to mess with the displays. I don't mess with them. I'm always curious. You see those TV sets, you pick them up, they weigh nothing. It's like, oh my God, that's so amazing.
The brand name is like Lux Gudicus.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a mystery there. They've gone over the security tapes. It doesn't show the area. It's in this area that in the kitchen showroom where something happened. They have no idea how it happened, how it got there. It's a total mystery. Inside a microwave, they found a real lamb's head.
What?
Oh, that's another good one. There's so many good articles that don't involve snakes.
So the next story here, I'm trying to pull up the link again. So it was kind of similar to the imagine. Well, there was the one that's self-explanatory. It was a naked man found masturbating in a closet.
Yeah.
Which, right? Justin's like, you can go to jail for that.
No, my God, I know.
Not if it's your. If it's your own, you're okay. All right. Then
what if it's my roommates?
What's it?
What if it's my roommates?
Yeah. So they had another one here, which was a guy goes to open up his door and somebody's standing there in a gorilla mask, gorilla costume, full on gorilla costume, stabs him and then runs away.
That was the
Merry punch. Christmas to you.
Which is a very random, odd thing.
It certainly is. Well, there we go.
All right. So I could find some other fun stuff, but I think the sign of a lamb in a microwave at IKEA is one of the harbingers of the apocalypse.
That's amazing.
IKEA itself isn't one.
Well, we're trying to go to the, they're doing this whole big literal smorgasbord at the IKEA near us on Friday. And we're trying to get into that because
I'm bringing a lamb's head.
Oh my God.
How do we know it wasn't something they serve? I got Swedish relatives. I couldn't tell you what they wouldn't eat.
Hold on, say that again. Say, how do we know it's not something they serve?
How do we know it's not something they serve?
Right on cue.
Jeez. All right, I got a good one for you. So, authorities, emergency crews rescued a man who was stuck in waist-deep mud inside of a culvert under an interstate. Okay.
No explanation?
No, like, there's an explanation. Do you want to know what a story? You know what he was doing?
Chasing a snake?
No, not chasing a snake. It's stupid. Why would he be chasing a snake?
Mud, one-man mud wrestling, and he won.
No, he was a muskrat hunter.
Wow.
An Indiana muskrat hunter. Do you think he has a business card for that?
I think he has a website called Muskrat Love, but he couldn't get Muskrat Love, L-O-V-E, so it's L-U-V, and it's a .edu. Yeah.
I'm going to bet probably didn't go to college.
I think that's such a safe bet. It's off the board, Andrew.
Nobody in Vegas is taking that bet.
No one's taking that action. Yeah,
which, of course, one of the three of us did not go to college either. So
you and the muskrat hunter.
Yeah. All right. So no, this is a sad one. This is a sad one. All right. So we need to put out an all points bulletin for the crazy brothers from The Walking Dead. Because
Earl and Daryl.
Apparently, this is a headline: Hunters kill donut-loving bear.
Oh,
a friendly black bear named Bozo was shot and killed by crossbow archer David Price and five companions in northeastern Pennsylvania.
I like to think that this is viral marketing for the new Yogi Bear film. Yeah.
The man who fed the bear pastries for 17 years is in mourning, and the hunter who killed him is grousing about questions raised over his potential record kill, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported. So, the 879-pound bear had become a neighborhood attraction at Fernwood Resort, 440-acre Pocono Mountain Retreat. He was ordered to stop feeding the bear in September after someone tipped him off. Feeding bears and elks is illegal in that part of Pennsylvania, or in Pennsylvania. And then when crossbow archer David Price heard about a big bear being spotted at the Delaware Water Gap, he and his friends loaded up and went hunting. And they killed a bear that loved to eat donuts.
Bummer.
There we go. The only thing I think that could have been added to that is on the arrow that was sticking out of the corpse of the bear, the hunter, to taunt the man who fed him, just hung a chocolate glazed donut. Be like, in your face.
Yeah. It's sad. I don't know why it's... I think it's the phrase is what's funny to me. I mean, the fact the bear died is not funny. It's sad, but...
Yeah. Very hard to... You know, it's hard to put donut loving in front of anything and have it not be funny.
Yeah, and the bear named Bozo.
Donut loving president killed in Dallas. Yeah. See, that's silly.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I think this has been plenty enough weird... So that's the Weird Things podcast for today, for this week, at least for now.
I love you.
I love fudge.
We know you love fudge.
Fudge is also uncomfortable by how much you love fudge.
So fudge, excuse me, Spiro, when you go plan for a trip, what do you pack?
What do I pack? Well, I mean, little fudge for sure. Wait, why are you laughing? I got to defend myself against, I mean, a bear might come and I'm going to have to whip it out and smack him in the face. Right. So of course you got packs of little fudge.
So, do you pack fudge?
Me?
No, I'm asking.
Stop. All right. Yeah, of course I pack, but you know I know where you're going with this, and I'm trying to be an officer of the law. This is inappropriate.
Come on, TF. He's just an interviewer asking a question. Maybe he'll put us on the Weird Things podcast.
He's asking leading questions. This is my hero cop article, and all he wants to do is make jokes about our working relationship.
All he's going to do is tell it like it is. Come on, tell him, Fudge. Tell him how you pack.
I pack light. I pack thoroughly. And sometimes I get my things packed for me.
Would you like a listener shout out or maybe sponsor the podcast? Email weirdthingsmail@gmail.com. The same address where you can make a suggestion or write your own scenario. Weird Things Mail @gmail.com.